the Lifetime Adoption Foundation. We bring you real conversations about the journey of adoption, from the heartwarming to the honest and everything in between. I'm your host, Heather Featherston, and today we're turning the spotlight inward for a very special episode. We're going to be talking with Kim King, my co-host here at Let's Talk Adoption, and learning more about her. She is a longtime adoptive family coordinator at Lifetime Adoption. She also writes, edits, and really is a passionate advocate for building families through adoption. Kim's worn many hats through her years at Lifetime, from contributing to adoption outreach and education to guiding families through every twist and turn of their adoption process. But what's more powerful is her perspective. She's not just part of the mission, she actually lives it. Kim has seen firsthand the impact of faith, compassion, and dedication in adoption journeys. And today, I'm excited to hear her story. So settle in. This conversation will have insight. I know Kim will share her heart and a beautiful reminder of what makes adoption so meaningful. So welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Heather. I'm happy to be with you once again. I know we've spent many hours over our years together talking about adoption, and I'm excited that we have relaunched Let's Talk Adoption, the original adoption podcast. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to have you on kind of the other side to get to interview you a little bit. And, you know, why don't we start by just sharing how you first found your way to Lifetime Adoption in 2003, a long time ago.
Yes. So I was fresh from the Marine Corps and in my early 20s, a new mom, stay-at-home mom, and I was ready to find something to pour my skills into and be part of something. Mm-hmm. And I found that a woman was looking for help with her book writing projects. Mm-hmm. She just needed an editor. She just needed someone to bring them to, you know, the final stage, print and online availability. And that turned out to be Marty Caldwell, Lifetime's founder. And what, oh my gosh, I didn't expect to get emotional, but what a change. Talk about a pivot and a launching point in my life. I had no idea how much I was going to learn and how much that position working with Marty would help me grow and navigate all the things that were to come in the many years to follow.
You've really had a hand in many different areas at Lifetime. I want to pause and just talk a bit about, you mentioned the Marine Corps. What did you do in the Marine Corps?
Yes. So a few things, but the one that relates most to what I do here at Lifetime is that actually in the Marine Corps, I was in broadcasting, public affairs, marketing, and journalism. Mm-hmm. So print, digital, and video, audio, radio, TV, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And
so conveying the message.
Mm-hmm. I remember when Marty found you, she was excited because you had experience that really related to what she was looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from there till now, you've had a hand in, like I say, many different areas at Lifetime. What has that been, has that journey been like for you?
Yes. So, you know, being in my early 20s at the time and coming into this type of the force of nature that Marty Caldwell is, and the energy and the drive and the passion, I was just saying yes to everything, anything. Mm-hmm. Hey, if something needs to be vacuumed or put away or organized, yes, yes, yes. If we need to organize a podcast, well, it wasn't really called a podcast back then, but our
it was an internet radio show.
Back then. And then I got the opportunity one day when we were taking staff photos, was my first day that I got to meet the team at Lifetime Adoption, because before that I was working directly with just Marty full time.
Right.
I got to meet the team. I got to meet Veronica, Diane, Heather, all the major players that make Lifetime who we are. And the ladies were just, I could just see what a blessing they were, and I got to witness a little bit of the work that they did, and I just knew I wanted to be a part of that. So that was my next step. I got to work in the office at Lifetime Adoption and start working on the websites a little bit. And that's when Heather and I first met. You were here 6 months, and then I came along as the new pup of the team. Right. And I learned a ton. And as I was working just on the internet and communications editing, what we used to have a magazine. Mm-hmm. And I was overhearing the one side of the conversation as the Lifetime ladies, as I call them, would take phone calls. And they were answering questions for prospective adoptive parents, mm-hmm, and expectant mothers, birth moms. And it was my crash course beyond what I learned from Marty in working on her book projects with her and her story. Beyond that, really witnessing how they would communicate the message and the process to people who would call, I wanted to be part of that. So I just asked, hey, can I start doing that too? And then that just kind of one thing led to another. And here I am. I help families learn about adoption. And if they have questions, they can reach out, and I am always happy to share more about what to expect and just kind of be one of the people on the path that God has for them, holding up a lantern, because, you know, that path can be dark for couples, mm-hmm, and they don't know where to turn. Confusing. The internet is overwhelming and the information, mm-hmm, is conflicting, and they really need someone to understand where they're coming from and, mm-hmm, help them identify what their desires are and help them get really clear on what their next steps are, and help them also get an idea of the lay of the land in the world of adoption that they're suddenly landing on the planet, the world of adoption.
You know, and you talk a little about that, about, you know, being an adoptive family coordinator, mm-hmm, talking to families as they're starting up. What, you know, what do you think some of the more common concerns or questions that hopeful parents come to you with as they are just starting to learn what modern adoption looks like?
Mm-hmm. Well, open adoption is a big factor. Even though it's something that we've all been doing at Lifetime for nearly 40 years now, open adoption is pretty new to most families that are encountering a path in adoption after coming through infertility. Mm-hmm. So if they're coming to adoption from infertility, there's a big possibility that they don't have anyone in their family that has gone through the path they're about to start.
Right.
And they don't really understand the heart and intention of a birth mom who is voluntarily creating an adoption plan. So it's, right, it's heart-changing for them to understand the reality, mm-hmm, of what modern adoption is and what it's not, and to help them understand the success that we've seen and the benefits of that contact to their child, mm-hmm, and what benefits their child benefits them as parents. And
absolutely,
I help them understand that, yes, open adoption started to become a thing maybe around 40-ish years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And originally it was more because of birth moms, right? Women who were going through this and finally getting to make some of the choices in their adoption,
right,
plans. And when given the option, they would want to know how the child is doing throughout the years. And they would share how it helped them feel so much better about their choice, knowing that when they leave the hospital, it's not goodbye forever, but that they're still going to be thought of throughout the years and never have to wonder what happened to their baby. So that was the start. We had a heart for birth moms and obviously still do, but that was the driving force with open adoption back then. And then adoptive parents started to desire it because they were encountering through the years medical situations and wanted to contact birth parents. But if they didn't really maintain that contact, that was something that was very challenging if they needed information or even some sort of medical donor for their child. Mm-hmm. So adoptive parents started to see some reasons specific to them as to why they would want to keep in touch. And then in more recent years, there were finally studies done that show the benefits to the adoptee. And once that came to light and was proven through science that it benefits the adoptee's mental health, that child never has to grow up wondering who his or her birth mom is and having questions that go unanswered and carrying the burden of whether or not they would like to meet their birth mom and when that could be and if that could even be possible, that instead of that, the adoptive parents are maintaining that connection and the adoptive parents are in the driver's seat. And adoptive parents, when understanding that benefit to the child, they started to want that. And when birth moms started to understand the benefit to the child, they started to want open adoption as well. So now it's the norm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm sure that's a conversation you have with hopeful adoptive parents frequently.
I do. Yeah.
Yep. What advice do you give families who, you know, maybe that is a question they have, but maybe they feel like, okay, that's the tip of the iceberg. Maybe they're feeling overwhelmed by the process, or maybe they're in process and feeling discouraged by the wait. What, you know, what's some of the general advice you share?
So I like to help families understand that there is a flow to what they're going to feel as they go through the adoption process and what they can expect. And this leads to more like helping kind of prevent that feeling during the wait that's really, really hard. And waiting is hard for anyone, no matter how long or short their wait is. That's usually the hardest part of adoption. But I like to help families, especially when I'm talking with the families that are really big on checklists. They are planners. They're very organized and on the ball. And they are used to following a recipe and getting the result, right? And this is just like our founder, Marty Caldwell, the founder of Lifetime Adoption. She was that type A, very organized, go-getter, used to following the steps and getting the result and being successful. And so when families have this perspective and this approach, I like to help them understand that it's going to be normal, that at first there is a ton for you to do. You're going to have checklists to complete. People are going to be calling, texting, emailing you, needing things from you. There is going to be a big flurry of activity around you. And then once you reach the end of all the to-dos, it gets really quiet, or it feels really quiet on your end of things as adoptive parents. But it is essential to get to that point, because that means, hey, you have your home study done. Everything's all wrapped up with your profile and your video. Your online profile is all completed. You don't have anything else needing to be done. Your social worker isn't waiting on anything from you. Your coordinator at Lifetime isn't waiting on anything for you. Now the work of presenting you to birth moms is happening behind the scenes. And that can feel really quiet to adoptive parents, because now their agency is really doing all the unseen work behind the scenes. And so what I like to help families kind of plan for themselves in advance is sort of like how they'll reallocate and funnel that energy and time and activity, all those to-dos that they were wrapped up in and immersed in, how they're going to redirect that to something else and have a plan for themselves. For that energy while they're waiting to be chosen. Things like home projects, self-improvement, spending time with people that maybe you won't have as much time and free hands to participate in once you get the call. And now you're off and running to that state where your baby is born, and now you're a new mom and dad. So I like to help families preemptively, even before they come into the program, with what to expect and how that quiet during the wait is all very natural. And something that I really love about Lifetime, that families have told me many times during our calls together, that is so different from what they've heard from other places and experienced firsthand as families with other adoption professionals. I love that with Lifetime, no matter what, you're going to have 3 points of engagement with us every single month. You have your monthly check-in. They have their twice a month exclusive webinars, and that is very different from a lot of adoption professionals, and that helps them stay plugged in and prepared and engaged in their adoption process. And so it's not month after month of silence and not knowing what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially for Christian families, those waits are a little easier, I think, to understand when you have a kind of a baseline of God working in the quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, just because it may feel quiet doesn't mean God's not working, doesn't mm-hmm. mean your adoption isn't progressing. It just is a period of quiet after you've run to get all the boxes checked.
Mm-hmm. I love that you brought up letting God do his thing, so to speak. One of the things that is really hard for some adoptive parents is when maybe one spouse is ready mm-hmm. to adopt and start the journey with an agency and they're ready to jump in. Usually it's the one that's been learning more and doing more of the research and engaging more with us and getting their questions answered, while the other spouse isn't ready to go full force, so to speak. They're not ready to sign up with an agency. Oftentimes it is the wife that is communicating with me. What do I do if my husband isn't ready to start yet? And I almost always encourage her to quietly pray, be in prayer that God will work on his heart. Let the Holy Spirit work on your husband's heart and give your husband quiet space, time to come to terms with whatever his thing is, because usually the husband is going to be processing the fact that they're going to be adopting instead of having a biological child in a very different way from how a woman will process that. Mm-hmm. And he will often process it quietly and in solitude and then come up for air and say, I'm ready to adopt. But the last thing you want, and we've seen this through the years, Heather, is when one spouse is dragging and pushing and prodding and fixing things for the other spouse just to get them to start the adoption without giving that spouse that wasn't ready the time to naturally come to it on his or her own terms.
Right. Right. And I can think of specific instances where that was how the story ended. Mm-hmm. They did move forward, but ultimately one spouse shared, wait a minute, this isn't where I want to be. So I appreciate that you said that, Kim, because certainly it is, and actually the case I thought of, the wife was the one who finally said, this isn't what I want. So definitely, I think we do hear more from the wives that the husband is working to get on board, but mm-hmm. it definitely can go both ways. And mm-hmm. I think that is definitely one of the challenges that new families have, especially because this is often a completely new project, for lack of a better word. You know, most couples, they don't understand what modern adoption looks like. And there are fears and there are, you know, things that they may be coming to adoption believing that may or may not be true. I mean, one of the common myths, we were just talking about this the other day, the common myths is that there's no healthy babies to adopt, or that you hear about all these children waiting to be adopted. It's like, well, those are two things that aren't necessarily true, but are common statements that we hear and we explain. So it's just good to know and understand that Kim, people like Kim, you know, who work for adoption agencies, are always happy to answer your questions, because, you know, anyone who works in adoption wants to be sure that adoptive parents understand and birth parents understand what modern open adoption is today. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's an area where I definitely say there are no stupid questions, because, yeah. you know, Kim, I'm sure you're very familiar with being the first person many people have talked to about adoption. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I love to just, well, I try to sense how ready they are and for what amount of information. Mm-hmm. Some people just want the high level bullet points. But if someone is showing that, hey, I'm a sponge, just tell me everything. I love to like sit there and help them understand every single moment of a typical adoption, from you decide what you're looking for in your adoption, the age of baby, if you're open on race, are you willing to stay connected with a birth mom and basic communication throughout the years, and help them understand the application process at lifetime adoption and specifically what to expect, and then how they need to start their home study and work on their profile, and how they'll be shown to birth moms and they get chosen and then fly to the state where their baby is being born, and how they won't necessarily be strangers with the birth mom. In a lot of adoptions, they will have had the chance to get to know her, and how typically the baby can be discharged from the hospital right into their care, and the attorney will help with the paperwork and the timelines that could be involved depending on the states that are involved, and then awaiting clearance to be able to take baby home, and how you'll be on your maternity and paternity leave, and then you'll meet with your social worker again if your state requires post-placement visits, and then you'll wait for your date in court to finalize. I love going into those details, and I find that families feel so reassured by having someone sit and talk with them about the process and answer their questions along the way. I want adoption professionals to be more patient with families, because they tell me that they just felt rushed off the phone, or they had to wait 2 weeks for a call back. And this is someone's life. You know, they're making life choices, and their hearts are tender, and they are in such a vulnerable position. Of course, birth moms are too, but that's why it's important. And that's why I love at Lifetime how we have staff dedicated to adoptive parents and placing parents, no matter where they are in their process, that there is a team that's going to prioritize you.
If you're pregnant and wondering what your options really are, or if you know someone who is, I want to tell you about a book that's helped so many women sort through their thoughts and feelings. It's called So I Was Thinking About Adoption. It's honest, compassionate, and written just for women who are facing an unexpected pregnancy and want to understand what adoption could look like for them. There's no pressure, just real information and encouragement from someone who's walked the road with thousands of women. You can get it on Amazon or download it for free at freeadoptionbook.com. You know, I know we touched on faith, and one of the things I hear you say is you talk about seeing God's plan in action through adoption. Can you share a moment that affirmed that for you, or that you saw God's plan in action?
Well, I just really have heard so many stories with birth parents choosing families and just the timing of things. What really stands out to me is timing, most importantly. When you hear adoptive parents, like on our private webinars or even our public webinars, reflect back on the timing of those moments when they were so anxious and crying out to God, is this going to happen? Should we give it up? Should we give up this dream? Because maybe birth moms don't choose adoption anymore. Maybe they don't want us. We don't want to be fools waiting here to be chosen, waiting for someone that's not coming, right? Mm-hmm. And little do they know that in those moments when they take that time to surrender that to God, that on the other side of the coin, the birth mom is finding out she's pregnant, or she's mm-hmm. going through something that sort of mirrors what they're experiencing. And it's just, there's such a spiritual aspect to how God is weaving the stories together. So overall, I would say that is how I see God's plan in action. And I love hearing those stories from our staff when they share that. I love attending our own webinars.
Is that really what makes working in adoption fulfilling for you?
You know, I was taken by surprise when something clicked for me Because my mom was adopted internationally from Korea back in the 60s. And of course, her story is her story, right? But as we all know in general, with international adoption, especially back then, there was no chance of knowing anything about your biological family.
So she knows nothing about her biological family?
Right. Yeah. So, and of course, you know, her thoughts and feelings about that are her own personal
Sure.
thoughts and feelings mm-hmm. that have come and gone throughout the decades of her life. But understanding that and watching her go through it, and also feeling that myself as
sure.
her daughter. And yes, we have amazing grandparents who brought us up in the Lord. My dad was a pastor. My grandparents were very active in the church where my dad ended up being a youth pastor at. So mm-hmm. that's kind of funny to think about, that my grandparents were already there before my dad came along as a young pup, a youth pastor. But when I talk with adoptive parents who are afraid of open adoption, I can help them understand the emotions and the thoughts and the burden that is on the shoulder of someone who mm-hmm. has to go through life not knowing. And it's not just the medical, but not knowing who you came from and why choices were made. Whether or not an adoptee says, I want to know more, or I have questions, whether or not they ever verbalize that, or perhaps they verbalize the opposite. Well, I don't know anything and I don't want to know. If she didn't want to keep in touch with me, why should I? Whether or not they admit it, I want to say every adoptee has feelings about this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're afraid to admit that they want to know more about their birth mom or story because they don't want to hurt their parents, their mom and dad who adopted them.
Right.
They don't want their mom and dad to ever feel like something was lacking. And that's what's driving them to want to know more. But it is totally natural to want to know your story and where you came from, especially if it involves adoption. That's
Definitely.
Just such a big mystery if you don't. I mean, I think all the time, there are literally people in Korea that I am blood and DNA related to, just like how I'm related to my dad's side of the family. And I will never know them.
Right. And it's
yeah.
interesting because, you know, what you're expressing is the generational impact. You know, we said your mother's story is her story, but you as her daughter have your own story. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have certainly her adoptive family as family,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, that decision to you know, find or not find, which it's nearly impossible with international adoption, but that decision affects you. And
mm-hmm.
if it is, you know, if it is the adoptee's decision to make, again, that is their decision, but it is a generational impact that will affect their children.
Mm-hmm. And there's an interesting duality too in your identity as a part of a family that you were adopted into, or that your mother was adopted into, so therefore you were adopted into, and also wondering about your biological side that you'll never know. You literally do receive the legacy of the family that adopted you.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, my grandparents, when they were Pentecostal, Oklahoma, he was in the Navy, she was a homemaker, and I have those traits.
Mm-hmm.
They're my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
They're who raised my mom. And so sometimes if I sound a little Southern, it's because my grandparents are from Oklahoma. And
right.
I like Southern food, and I believe in the Bible, and I, obviously, you shared, I'm a veteran. And so those values, that legacy, that's directly from my grandparents. And they adopted my mom, and I would have just been another egg in Korea if that hadn't happened.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting, Kim. Thank you for sharing that, because I think, you know, sharing our personal stories, especially when they do relate to adoption, either directly or indirectly, you know, it's more learning. It's more to help understand, because, you know, I'm sure if, you know, given the opportunity to, you know, your phone rings and it says, you know, hey, I just found out I'm your biological cousin from Korea, you know, that is something you might be interested in pursuing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But again, the types of adoption we're talking about domestically, modern adoption, these phone calls don't necessarily happen because the children are growing up in the truth and knowing both families and right. understanding.
It's interesting too, Heather, because, you know, at Lifetime, we have an adoption answer line that's answered 24/7. And we actually get a lot of calls from adoptees of all ages on that line. And I always try to take that moment to hear them out and connect with them, because whether they are 13 or 60 or even older, and I've had all those ages, I've had kids get on the phone and call the hotline, senior citizens that want to know more, people who just got a diagnosis that want to know their medical history, college age people, someone that their birth mom reached out and they don't know if they're ready to have that encounter. And I just want to take the time to hear them out and help them sort of navigate, even though that's not what our answer line is really for. It's a birth mom support line, right? But when we get those calls, it gives me those experiences from them that I bring back to adoptive parents. And those adoptive parents, when they become aware, they don't want their teenager to go Googling and searching on their own. And really, I always ask any adoptee if I think their adoptive parents could still be alive. You know, if they're already like 80 years old, then I'm not going to ask. But I'll say, have you told your mom and dad that you would like to, you know, that you have these questions, you'd like to find out about your birth mom? Every single time, they say they have not. And especially when they're younger, it never occurred to them that their parents could actually be the best resource to help them and the best support to help them. It literally just hasn't occurred to them. So I always steer them back to their parents as long as it's safe. And sometimes it's not, you know, these can sometimes be children that are in the foster system. Sometimes it's not. Yeah. So I always say, as long as it's safe.
Yeah. I have talked to people in those cases too. And I think some of the ones that are, I think the most heartbreaking for me are when someone has died, and the whoever's calling me, in going through, say, their mother's things, discovered they were adopted and they never knew, and mom's gone and dad's gone, and what do I do with this knowledge? Where do I go look? Definitely is one of those things that comes up a lot more, I think, than most people know or think. And many times those are, again, not the adoptions that are happening, say, in the last 20 years, certainly not in the adoptions that are happening today, but in the adoptions, you know, in the 50s and 60s. So,
Yeah. And so that those experiences and those conversations, whether or not when I'm on the phone with an adoptive family, whether or not our values align and we feel we can help them, if they have questions about open adoption, I always want any opportunity that they're willing to give to learn about it, because it's for the sake of the child. And if their heart can be changed by one thing I say, then that's going to help their child, their future child they inevitably will adopt.
Absolutely. Definitely. Kim, you know, what gives you hope or maybe excitement about the future of adoption?
Well, I love how open adoption is normalized now. And I love how I think the biggest factor that has changed how open adoption can be normalized is the empathy and support for birth moms. Because, you know, there is a whole generation of what I call angry birth moms, rightfully so. And I'm sure in a future podcast, and I know in podcast past, we have talked about the injustice of those birth moms in decades and generations past. But I love how now people understand that this is her choice and her call, and she gets to make every decision about how this adoption works, when, if, and how, and with whom. And that is something that I just really love about how far adoption has come, that support for birth moms and the educational component, you know, is now more normalized. I'm sure there are some dinosaur adoption professionals out there that still like to tell birth moms how it's going to be. But again, dinosaur, right? And like Marty always says, we don't want to be a dinosaur. She uses that in a lot of ways. But particularly when it comes to, you know, the support we provide for women, I love how Lifetime has been the pioneer in open adoption and such a loud voice in the world of adoption. I love our messaging. I love how we lay out the steps and make it really clear. And that's feedback we get a lot, that for the first time when adoptive parents found our site for the first time, it actually was clear to them. And you know what else adoptive parents say? It doesn't seem so transactional. Because to them, this isn't a transaction. This is meaningful, and this is their life, and this is how they're answering the call that God put on their heart to become parents.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, what's one message or encouragement you'd like to leave with families listening today, whether they're waiting or wondering or walking through adoption or even just knowing where to start?
Yeah. Keep taking steps. I think no matter where you are in your process, call an adoption coordinator such as myself. Because when you can connect with someone and get some insight and get some understanding of where you are, then you're able to get some arrows pointing, right? That coordinator can point you in the right direction to where you need to take those next steps. Adoption is a big process. There's a lot to learn, but you don't have to know everything in order to take your next step. You know, such as adoption laws are different in every state. What attorney am I going to need? What laws am I going to need to follow when it comes to assisting with her rent, birth mom's rent? Or how long is it until a birth mom can no longer change her mind about the adoption? You don't have to know every factoid. In fact, that can be almost a bad thing. But if you can find an agency that you feel really good about, you like their messaging, you care about birth moms and so do they, and you like their responsiveness, and that's important to you, communication is important to you, find a team that you align with and measure that against as well, whether or not they're doing the types of adoptions that on a regular basis that you're looking for.
Right.
Such as if you're looking for older child adoption, well, if they mostly do newborn adoption, maybe even though you have the same values, they're not able to meet your need, and you're going to have to acknowledge that and accept that and find the right path for you. But yeah, find an agency that is doing on a regular basis the adoptions that you are open to with families like yours, and also follow the steps. That's why it's important to find an agency that you align with, because now from the very cornerstone of your relationship, you're going to be able to have that trust that the things they're asking you to do align with your morals, ethics, and values. And something that hurts families is hindsight, not knowing what their morals, ethics, and values were in adoption, and jumping in quickly with an agency that rushed them along and then looking back and seeing what was lacking in the support for their birth mom. And because we get a lot of families who have already adopted coming into our program. Mm-hmm. So I hope that, was that clear? Follow the steps. Choose someone that aligns with you.
Yeah.
And someone that aligns with you so you feel comfortable following the steps.
Right, right. If listeners want to connect with you, mm-hmm. how can they reach you directly?
Yes. My email is kim@lifetimeadoption.com. Super simple. Kim, K-I-M, @lifetimeadoption.com. You can call the office, 727-493-0933. If you do, shoot me an email, give me some context, let me know kind of what's going on and what state you're in as well. And then hopefully we can, you know, get on a call or I can answer some questions via email. I have a check-in calendar as well, so we can set up a time too. So just reach out. I think that is a great first step. Just reach out and we can take it from there one step at a time.
Wonderful. Well, Kim, thank you so much for stepping into the spotlight today and sharing not just your experience, but also your heart for adoption. I know personally, but it's very clear that your work at Lifetime is more than a job. It's a ministry of love, of patience, and really of your faith in action. I know you guide families through the emotional ups and downs. You offer hope on the other end of the line, and you really embody compassion and commitment, the type that adoption deserves. So, for those of you who joined us today, whether you're starting to consider adoption, whether you're waiting with hope, walking alongside someone on their journey, you know, I hope what Kim has shared today reminds you that behind every adoption, there are real people pouring their hearts into helping families grow.
Thanks for joining us on Let's Talk Adoption. If you'd like to learn more about today's episode, please visit letstalkadoption.com. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss a conversation. Until next time, take care and God bless.